Do it! What are you waiting for? Listen to Patrick Madrid.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you can miss it.
Yeah, that's true. That's for sure. 888-914-9149. That was fun with the Story Corner thing. I'm glad that Glenn was nearby. They love you, Glenn. They really love you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Candace. We're going to try again. Candace in upstate New York. Good morning.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question about the rosary. When you do the rosary, like if you have a specific thing that you're praying about, is there a specific mystery that you should be praying regularly?
Well, you have the different mysteries to choose from. So the traditional mysteries are the glorious, the joyful, and the sorrowful, as you know. And then right. Pope John Paul II, he suggested for those who want to, the luminous mysteries that he composed. And so you have those to choose from if you want to meditate upon those mysteries of the rosary. There are certain traditional days on which the church would recite different mysteries. So Friday, for example, it's common to recite the mysteries or meditate on the mysteries, the sorrowful mysteries, excuse me. But you're not obliged to do that. You're free to meditate on any of the mysteries that you want to. So it could be Sunday, in which case it's traditional to meditate, for example, on the glorious mysteries, the resurrection, etc. But if you wanted to say the rosary and meditate on the sorrowful mysteries on a Sunday, you can do that. You're not bound to only look or only recite certain mysteries on a particular day.
Right, and this doesn't have anything to do necessarily with what you're praying about, you know, like a sick person in your family or, you know, whatever the subject matter is of the actual praying for, you know what I'm saying?
I do, yeah. So your intentions okay. are also, you're free to pray for whatever intentions you have, and that can be, it's utterly compatible with any of the mysteries of the rosary, any or all of them. Okay. So you have that freedom. What I would recommend is read the document from Pope John Paul II. It's called Rosarium Virginis Mariae. It's the Rosary of the Virgin Mary. This was an apostolic letter that he wrote. Ooh, when did that come out? That must have been in the 90s, I think it was. 2002, excuse me. And in that document, he gives you all of the biblical and theological background to the rosary, the historical background, but he also talks about the custom of reciting the mysteries on different days. And he talks about your intentions, which you can pray for, which is basically anything. So I'll just give you a quick quote, okay. as long as we're on it. He says, according to current practice, Monday and Thursdays are dedicated to the joyful mysteries, Tuesday and Friday to the sorrowful mysteries, Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday to the glorious mysteries. And he says, where might the mysteries of light be inserted? That's where he's suggesting for people to consider using the luminous mysteries. He says, if we consider that the glorious mysteries are said on both Saturday and Sunday, and that Saturday has always had a special Marian flavor, the second weekly meditation on the joyful mysteries, mysteries in which Mary's presence is especially profound or pronounced, could be moved to Saturday. Thursday would then be free for meditating on the mysteries of light. So these are given by way of suggestion. He's not mandating this. He's not saying you must do this. He's just giving an example of how, you know, how the custom is at the moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and then the other part of that question is, like, so Thursday is the certain mysteries, because I have a thing on my phone that I follow. So if I pray the rosary more than once a day, do I stick with the same mystery, or do you move on to another one?
This is what I was saying a moment ago. You have freedom to do anything you want. You can...
Okay.
He's just saying on these days, it's customary to say these. So I, for example, don't follow this. So what I do personally is on Sunday, I pray the joyful mystery, or the glorious mystery, rather. Mondays and Fridays, I pray the sorrowful mysteries. And I pray the joyful mysteries on Saturday and Tuesday. It's in glorious on Wednesday and, I'm sorry, Thursday and Sunday. But that's just me. It's just the habit that I've fallen into. The church doesn't say that you must do it this way or that way. It just says this is the custom. Mm. I think following the custom is good. I have a bit of a hybrid, but that's just me, and everybody can pray the mysteries as you wish.
Right.
Oh, okay, but you know what? I didn't answer your question. So let me answer your question. The what I would suggest is, so let's say on Friday you pray the sorrowful mysteries, and then you're going to pray the rosary again. Well, it makes sense to me that you would then pray one of the other mysteries, pray the joyful mystery or the sorrowful mystery, I'm sorry, or the glorious mystery. Or if you're in the habit of praying the luminous mysteries, you could pray those. So it seems it would be more, you would fulfill the spirit of praying the rosary even more so by praying most or all of the mysteries. So a true full rosary has 15 decades in the traditional form, meaning the sorrowful, the glorious, and the joyful mysteries. So if you wanted to say a complete rosary, that would be the complete form. And when you talk about praying the rosary, though, typically it just means the 5 decades of a given mystery. But you have freedom to pray it however you wish.
Okay, very good. Thank you for your answer, and thank you for your time, and God bless you guys. I listen to you guys all the time.
Oh, thank you. Well, that makes us very happy, and we're glad. Just tell your friends, Candace, and you can become, if you're interested, a parish ambassador. It requires maybe up to an hour a month of your time at the parish, putting out materials and things. We supply all the materials, bumper stickers, posters, printed materials, et cetera.
Oh, very good.
If you would ever like to join us, there's no cost to you, just a little bit of time, that's all. And you can share Relevant Radio with so many more people in your area. Just go to relevantradio.com/ambassador. Thank you. How about Ann now in New York? Another caller from New York. Good morning,
Ann.
Hello.
Hi, Patrick. I can't believe it got through.
Well, here we are.
I'll take a breath. It's very nice to hear you.
Thank you.
Now, I'm going to try to make this as clear and short as possible.
Okay.
The other day, possibly 5 days ago, a woman called in, said her daughter is drinking too much and she didn't know how to approach it. Mm-hmm. And it was followed by another woman said her husband is drinking, over drinking every night, like is out of control.
Okay.
She didn't know how to tell him. Now, I don't know if you recall those two phone calls,
but
that affected me.
Yeah.
That affected me because I have studied this for years and years and years, you see. So nothing I ever did worked. So one day, this fell into my hands. I can't remember how I got it. You know it. It's a pocket-sized book called The New Testament, Psalms and Proverbs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you gave me a Bible at the time, I would have read a page and given up.
Okay.
Too overwhelming. But with this, when you open it up, it gives you very good things about, you know, very good little articles in the front. And then it gives like 200 index of problems people have. So say if you're away from God, you know, you feel that you've come away from God. You say, I'm feeling away from God and I don't want to. What will I do? So you look up it in the index and it says John 1, 8 through 9. So you look up that or the Psalm 51, 1 and 10. You look it up and you read it. And you meditate on that for a couple of minutes, drinking your coffee in the morning. And then you get a flashcard, you know, and you write down the sentence and you carry it in your pocket and you say to yourself, yes, I understand what the psalm is saying and it's helping me, if it's helping you. You see, it's kind of like putting it in spoonfuls so you can digest it.
Right.
So this has been amazing, like this, like turned the corner for me. This is years ago.
Yeah.
And I have read this a lot. So I always mark the page that I've read in the index. And I've noticed that I've gone back to it several times, the same one, you know. So anyway, it says here, in John 8:35, and a slave does not abide in the house forever. No, but the son, that's not it. 34, Jesus answered them, most assuredly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave to sin. So I relate that to, if you drink every night, it's a sin to overdrink, and then you're doing it every night, you keep committing the same thing. So you're a slave to the alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, on 35, it says, so if you come to that fact, that you don't want to do that anymore, and you accept the Lord as your Savior, you bring it to the Lord, and he forgives you. It says 36, therefore, if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed.
Mm-hmm. So I like what you're saying here, Anne, because this, it's a topical way of associating these issues with things that Jesus had to say in general in the New Testament. It's, I can see why.
Well, he's helping me clarify. So this little book, you know, you can get it on eBay for $5 or whatever. It's got the index for people, because when they wake up, they have, like, say, temptation. Then it says three things to look up. It tells you the page and to read what it says in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
To, like, as a guide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's good. I think it's wonderful. So tell us again the name of this edition of the Bible. I'm sure there are some people who might like to look for that.
Well, it's 2.5 inches by 4 inches. That's the size of it. And it's it's pocket size, New Testament, Psalms, and Proverbs.
Got and it. Do you know, can you see in there, Anne, who the publisher is?
Looking. It says, it says this book not to be sold. Manufactured in the United States, Testament is presented in memory and honor of a friend who loved through the Gideon Memorial Bible Plan. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. So the Gideons, this is a group of Protestant folk who make sure that they supply Bibles at no cost to hotels. For example, if you go to a hotel, you're going to find a Gideon Bible. No doubt in the nightstand. So it's a Protestant organization, but it's a good work that they're doing. And I can tell that it worked well for you. So I really appreciate you taking a moment to share that with everybody. And I have a feeling there are other people for whom this is going to be a real tool. Thank you for that. I myself have given as gifts I want to pull up the exact title for you here, but it is a New Testament. So you have the four Gospels, of course, and then you've got the epistles all the way to the book of Revelation. And this one is kind of a leather-bound. It looks leather. I don't know if it's actual leather or not, but it's called the St. Joseph New Catholic Version. Very similar to the New American Bible that you're familiar with at Mass on Sunday, but a slightly different translation, but it's still a good one. And it's just a great, handy little New Testament. You can slip it in your purse. I don't carry a purse, but ladies, you can slip it in your purse. You can put it in your back pocket. And it's a very good little resource to have if you want to read Scripture on the go. So that, again, is called the New Testament New Catholic Version. It's the St. Joseph edition. It's published by Catholic Book Publishing Company. And your local Catholic bookstore will have it on the shelf, or they should. Thanks again, Ann. Appreciate it. Let's go to Dee Dee now in New York. A third New York call. Welcome, Dee Dee.
Hi, Patrick. Hi. I just wanted to ask you, I'm trying to find one of my classmates, because we were all confirmed just recently, and I can't. She chose Margaret as her name after St. Margaret of Scotland, and okay. I cannot find a prayer card for her. I can only find St. Margaret Mary of Alacoque, I believe, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Do you know where I could find one for St. Margaret of Scotland?
I would check with a Catholic goods store in New York. I'm sure you have plenty of them. Look up.
Well, yeah,
Catholic
I have done that.
Oh, okay. Well, then I don't
and they
know.
They don't seem to have them. I guess I could just, I don't know, go online and try and, you know, Google it, maybe Amazon or... yeah, eBay or something
that.
Like that.
That's what I'd have to do. But the reason I mentioned the Catholic Goods Store is that they have the, you know, the sources where they get all of their rosaries and books and Bibles and First Communion gifts and anything like that. The bigger the operation, the more of these resources they can get their hands on. So there may just not be a prayer card available for St. Margaret of Scotland. You might also, if you want to be really creative, you might go to the Archdiocesan website for Glasgow in Scotland. Go to their website and get in touch with them. Send them an email or a note and say, I'd like to get a holy card for St. Margaret of Scotland. They're unavailable here in the United States. Can you refer me to a bookshop? And they might be able to do that.
Thank you so much. Yes, I think, thank you very much, Patrick.
You're welcome, Dee Dee. Yeah, thank you. Have a good day. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to, let's see, Sam in Sparta, Wisconsin. Hello, Sam.
Good morning, sir. A few weeks back, you read an email a friend of mine sent in regarding a bad joke about IVF. Ultimately, the punchline had to do with cattle. It got me thinking since then. Are we doing anything wrong, or what's the church's teaching on embryos and IVF in animals? Like, we're going to put embryos into cows and heifers. Are we playing God?
No. So this is part of the science of animal husbandry, and so there is nothing immoral about manipulating the genetics through crossbreeding, for example, using the methods that are used, for example, for horses, to impregnate using artificial insemination, things like that. There's no moral quality one way or the other when we employ those means to engage in animal husbandry. Obviously, we have to take proper care of the animals, and we can't harm them. We can't, you know, be cruel to them or anything like that. But when it comes to reproduction, it's just part of animal husbandry, so there's no sin involved.
Excellent. Thank you for the clarification, and I apologize for the bad joke.
You know what? Yeah, when you said that, I was thinking, I don't even remember a bad joke. If it was that bad, you don't have to repeat it. But I don't really remember that happening on the program. So was my reaction negative when it came up?
No, it was more confused. The punchline was Angus and Simmental were the names, and those are two breeds of cattle. So long story short, I told my friend at men's group that my wife and I were considering IVF, and he got this big look on his face. And then I told him it was for cattle.
Oh, yeah, and I do remember that.
He emailed you.
Yeah, I guess that's a farmer joke. So now I get it.
Yeah.
Ha ha, that's pretty funny. All right, thanks. I'll be right back.
Relevant Radio.
Today, we'd like to thank Viviana, who is listening in California, for donating her 1975 Mercedes-Benz 450. That's elegant. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
You're old enough to make your own decisions, bro. It's time you started listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
At the intersection of faith and culture, The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Still the best.
It is the best. You can't top that. So that, I promised you earlier that we would educate you. If you're new to the program, you don't understand why does some song cut off. It all started with, and Cyrus, you were not a believer when I said, do this, and you said, no. And I said, do it. And you said, no.
I wasn't a believer until the engineers all ran in here thinking we went off the air.
Right.
And then I was like, okay, I get it now.
Well, okay. So again, this the old hands, regular listeners, they know this, but I find it amusing that that song, which is building and building and building, then you have the two snare beats, and then it resolves. You know, then you have the satisfaction of everything resolving. But when it cuts off like that, just at that point, I find it funny, and I think other people do too. Maybe not everybody,
It's but, great. Here's one. This is my shortest one.
Steve Miller. Yeah, because you're all primed for the rest of it. Give me another one. Give me another one or two.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
What does that say about me that I find that funny? I don't know, but I do. Okay, so that's what's happened. That's what that's all about. And I think we have to do this public service announcement every 6 months or so, yeah, just so people understand it.
And please keep people send in ideas. And some of them work. Some I try them all. And some of them work. Some of them don't work as well.
The Uga Chaka one, that was a suggestion,
that was
wasn't
great.
It?
Yep, that was a suggestion. There's tons. Jack and Diane and Steve Miller. Mm-hmm. I need new ones. So send them in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, we're always on the lookout. Because we like to have fun around here. So 888-914-9149. Let's go to Christy in Miami. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning.
I was
told to be concise and clear, so I'll get to the point. My question is simply, what do you think about I want to go to a psychologist. I'm Catholic.
Okay.
But as opposed to seeing a Catholic psychologist or a secular psychologist, which I kind of know the answer, but I want to hear you.
Okay, sure. Well, I would propose, and of course, this would depend upon what issues that you want to talk about or get some help with. Sometimes in your local area, there will be Catholic psychologists who are able to work in that field of whatever it is that you need help with. And maybe in some cases, there won't be somebody who's Catholic who has that competence. So my advice would be to start with your archdiocese, get in touch with the Archdiocese of Miami. And I'm guessing it's probably going to be a department called something like the Office of Family Life or something like that. And get in touch and ask them for a referral for a Catholic psychologist in the area. And they may say, okay, well, here's the website, or here's where you go, here's the number, et cetera. And then you can follow up on that and see if there is somebody who is what you're looking for. If you don't find the kind of psychologist that you would like to see, then ask them if they have a referral for, I mean, is there any other psychologist in the area who doesn't happen to be Catholic that they have confidence in, that they think would be a good alternative, etc. But I would start there with your archdiocese and get the benefit of what they would recommend and then see what happens. What do you think?
Yes, I think I've tried that before. I'm going to do it again, just in case.
Mm-hmm.
I think that at the time the archdiocese responded, no, we don't refer, or we don't. But I'm gonna see if maybe there has been changes, or maybe I never, you know, it was like that was like a few years ago.
Okay.
I am going to one now. The sole reason I'm bringing this up is because the person was wearing a pin at the University of Miami. It was a very secular university.
Okay.
And the person was wearing like a woke pin.
Yeah.
You know, like a rainbow colored pin, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like thing. And I just thank you for your answer. It's because I really believe in God and his tenderness. And I don't want and I feel that if someone's gonna guide me, why would I go to someone who maybe doesn't it's scary because I don't want to put myself in the hands of someone who isn't
right.
Who maybe doesn't believe in. And it's hard because it's, you know, the core values of Jesus are forgiveness and things like that.
Yes. Right? I agree with you. You have to be careful. It's like you're obviously careful about what food you eat or what liquid you drink. You don't want to drink something that can harm you. So you screen out those foods or beverages that are going to be bad for you. We have to take the same level of care, or even greater care, I would say, with our souls and our minds. So yes, I agree with you. There is another resource, Christy, that I hadn't thought of at first, but it occurred to me a moment ago. There is a kind of a clearinghouse website called CatholicTherapists.com, CatholicTherapists.com, and you can search by geography. So where you are in Florida, it would be easy to put your info in, and then it will pull up within a X mile radius what the options are. That's another way that you can start looking for the kind of psychologist that you would like to meet.
Okay, thank you so much.
You are welcome. Thank you for that. CatholicTherapist.com. Now, I wanted to spend a little time. By the way, the number is 888-914-914. And if you'd like to call and be on the program, call that number. I saw something on Twitter recently that I couldn't help but say that I wanted to offer a comment on. And this is, there is a lady, I believe she's Catholic, if I'm not mistaken. She goes by Pearl, and her handle on Twitter is Pearly Things. And she had a comment here about the prodigal son parable. And you know the parable. Jesus talks about the son who he doesn't want to stay and work at the family ranch, the family farm, whatever. And he demands of his father that he give him his inheritance, which he promptly leaves and squanders, and winds up living in destitution. So he's now at the point where, after riotous living and prostitutes and who knows whatever else he was getting involved in, he blew all the money that he had rightfully coming to him as his inheritance, and he's left with destitution. So he's, you know, sleeping behind the dumpster and just eating the scraps of food that the pigs would eat, things like that. And he doesn't want to live that way, so he finally decides he will get up and go back to his father's house. And he's thinking, well, my father's no way he's going to accept me back in the status of a son, so I'll just see if I can't get a job there, so at least I can eat with the servants at better food than what I've got here dumpster diving. That's the essence of the story. And so when I saw this, I thought, okay, this is interesting. What does she have to say? And she says the prodigal son, the parable, was a warning for the children, not the parents, showing that by being disobedient, you will get punished greatly until you lose everything. And only by having a righteous person willing to forgive you after you hit rock bottom can you come back out. Now, the heading of her tweet was misunderstanding the prodigal son parable. She says, the prodigal son, he did this damage to his family and his parents and squandered everything given to him. He had to go back home, held his head low. And she's doing this in the context of a woman who has, and this is on Twitter. I won't tell you who she is because I don't really want you to go out and look for her. But she's an example of a woman who has made a lot of money, like millions and millions of dollars, doing online pornography, and has had, or appears to have had, a conversion. Now, there's more than one woman who fits this description, who has had a conversion to the Catholic Church. So if you're thinking, oh, he's talking about X, I'm probably not. Or, oh, he's thinking about, maybe I'm not. So don't leap to any conclusions, okay? Because it may not be the person you're thinking of. But interestingly, there are some of these women coming out of this terrible situation and finding Christ, and they're having a conversion. I think what Pearl is referring to is that she's a millionaire. She's got a lot of money to show for this bad work that she was doing. So she's saying she's not really a prodigal son. Well, it's, you know, it's obviously not Pearl's place to make that judgment one way or the other. She can observe the circumstances and draw conclusions. But what really caught my eye is that there is another woman who then is now going to correct Pearl, and I don't think Pearl's understanding of the parable is exactly correct either. But where it really gets interesting is that this other woman, she goes by Emily K. May, She says Pearl is cosplaying as a theologian, but this is actually my area of expertise. The prodigal son, she says, is not about the prodigal son at all. This story was not written for wayward children to read and say, I can always come back home. That's not the point. She says the main character of the story is the elder brother, whose frustration is palpable when his younger brother, who squandered everything, returns home and is accepted without condition. And so she goes on and on in that vein. I won't read it to you, all of it, because it's a bit tedious, but they're both wrong. This second woman, Emily, she's wrong. It's not just about the elder brother. The story of the prodigal son is universal because each of these three characters, the father, the prodigal son, and the older brother, are for all of us. And you can be any one of those people. And you are the prodigal son if you're a sinner. You are the older brother if you are a sinner who's trying to do things the right way and you're faithful and you're trying to live according to what you know is right. And somebody like this woman who was doing all the porn online and she has a conversion experience and she comes into the Catholic Church, you could maybe feel some rumblings of resentment. So the thing I just wanted to point out is both of these pseudo Bible commentators are wrong, each in their own way. And I would say more so the second one, Emily. She doesn't manifest that this is an area of expertise if she says that the entire point of the parable is the older brother, because it's not just the older brother. That's what I'm saying. It's universal in its appeal, and it's universal in its application. So sometimes you're the dad, the father of the prodigal son. Sometimes you are the prodigal son, in which case, of course, we all are if you consider sin. And sometimes you're the older brother. So it would be incorrect to reduce this parable and say it's only really about this one particular person, because that's just not true. And I wanted to mention that because I saw this get a little bit of traction on the Twitters, and I thought that would be worth talking about, just so you had a little sense of perspective there. 888-914-9149. Why don't we go back to the phones now? Let's start with Bernadette in Chicago. Hello, Bernadette.
Hi, Patrick. I heard one of your callers just a little bit ago looking for a holy card for St. Margaret of Scotland. And yeah. So I just wanted to make a comment. She should look on Etsy. Recently, my great-nephew was making his confirmation, and he chose St. Expeditus. I didn't even know there was a St. Expeditus. But found out a lot about him, of course. But on Etsy, there was all kinds of neat things. And there was one vendor there in particular. I just want to give a shout-out, because when Scott Hahn came to Bishop Knoll in Indiana last fall, mm-hmm. they have a lot of vendors that come there as well. And there was a lady I met, and she sells these ornaments on Etsy called Our Saint Family. Mm-hmm. And she made a little ornament of Saint Expeditus. So just really cool. Wanted to give that information.
Yeah, I don't hang out on Etsy. I think that that's typically a woman's domain where a lot of women get ideas for crafts and things like that, or they sell them. Is that right?
They sell all kinds of things, yes, for sure. I would tell your wife, Nancy, to look up Our Saint Family, because it's really cool. And you might want to see it as well. And that's just a plug for that vendor, because she was such a nice lady.
Thoughtful of you, Bernadette. Yeah, you're welcome. Now, before you go, I'm not in the club, but I understand that, and Nancy does look for a lot of things online to get ideas and whatnot, but Pinterest is another area where I wouldn't be surprised, now that you bring it up, that if you're looking for an obscure saint, you might just find it on Pinterest too, right?
Very true. Yes, absolutely. That's another one.
Okay, yeah.
Good deal.
Not my world, but I appreciate the beautiful things that Nancy finds there, that's for sure. Well, thank you, Bernadette. That's kind of you. We'll take a break, but we're coming right back. Those of you who are waiting on the phones, thank you for your patience. The number to dial if you're not on the phone yet, but you want to be, it's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. This hour is supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at notredamefcu.com/join. That's NotreDameFCU.com/join.
Oh, yeah, totally. The Patrick Madrid Show is 100% legal. For now, anyway.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Are you waiting for the music to stop?
Yes.
Not going to happen, man. It's Tom Petty.
When I think you're going to zig, you zag. And when I think you're going to zag, you zig.
So keep them guessing.
On my toes. On my toes. By the way, some good song suggestions just came in. And I will share them with Cyrus. Don't you worry about that. That Badfinger one is really good.
That's yeah, that is example. Great. I have some that came directly to my account that you don't know about. So hopefully I can surprise you.
All right. Fair enough. Let's go to Noel in San Francisco. Hi, Noel.
Oh, hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to add a bit, one aspect on why the older son had grumblings mm-hmm. on why the father accepted the son. Yeah. And I think it's one of the things that people play on the prodigal son, saying that it's a showcase of God's unconditional love, which I don't quite agree with. I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Because, we say, oh, why was he accepted so fast? And then the son would say, do you have unconditional love, Dad? And then we as Christians or Catholics will say, oh, yeah, that's a showcase of unconditional love. And the reason why I don't agree with that is because the father didn't come out to the son when he was doing his riotous living, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. home now uh-huh. anytime without changing. You know, you can just come home and I'll open the doors wide open, celebrate. The son had to do a 180, change his lifestyle, and then come to the father and say, I'm sorry. So it was a repentance that was not based on unconditional love from the father. So that's all I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the amazing things about this and all the other parables of the Lord is how inexhaustible they are in insights and in riches and things like that. No matter how many times you read them and think about them, you find some new little way of applying it. The term unconditional love, it's interesting that you use that term because I think most people nowadays, when they hear that or if they use that, they may be saying something different than what the phrase actually means. So unconditional love, here's how I interpret it, Noel, is that, take my children, for example, I love you no matter what because you're my children. That in itself is the ground of my love for you. And you can't change that. I'll never stop loving you. But I don't have unconditional approval of what any given child may do. And I'm not speaking here so much about my own children, but just in the abstract, as a father with children, I don't have unconditional approval for whatever you do. And I think that's where a lot of people, maybe they think, no matter what my son does, I'm going to be, you know, unconditional love. I'm going to love. Yes, but if by that you mean, I'm not talking about you, Noel, But if by that somebody's saying, well, if my son comes out as gay, that's okay with me because I love my son, unconditional love. That's not unconditional love. That's unconditional do whatever you want, and I'm still going to say that I'm okay with it. And that's, of course, not that's not the point of the prodigal son parable, because the father did not approve of what the son did. He loved him and accepted him back and forgave him, but he didn't approve of what caused the problem in the first place. Is that what you're driving at? Is that the point you're making?
Yeah, exactly what you're saying is that the father still had to put a requirement of the son, you know, changing his lifestyle, coming mm-hmm. back to him, and then at that point he was accepted. So at the point where he was still doing the riotous living or whatever yeah. lifestyle he was doing, it was not unconditional at that point.
Right, right. Yeah, there are conditions. Right. You want to come home, you have mm-hmm. to repent and you have to come home. You know, there are certain requirements if you want to resume your status as my son. Doesn't mean I don't love you, but you ruptured the relationship by what you did. And if you want to heal that, there are certain requirements that you have to do. That's true.
Makes sense. Thanks a lot, Patrick. Appreciate it.
You got it. Good to chat with you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Karina in Utah. Hi, Karina.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I am doing well, thank you.
I just had a question. So yesterday I took my mother to my eye doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm from Utah, so he's Mormon. Mm-hmm. And I was there at the appointment, and he was talking to my mother. He learned how to speak Spanish, and I asked him, oh, where did you learn, or how, mm-hmm. How was it? And he said, well, I did mission trips in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then this is my eye doctor.
Oh, your eye doctor. Got it. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then I had a desire in my heart just to tell him, are you willing to read a book that I would recommend to you? And he said, yeah, if you're willing to read the book I recommend to you. So obviously he sent me the Book of Mormon.
Right.
So so then at the end of the appointment, he's all like, is there a reason why you wanted to recommend me a book? So then I just told him, I just feel like you needed to know my Catholic faith.
Yes.
So I really hope that he converts, and I want to see what book can touch his heart so much, or, mm-hmm. Any recommendation of the book that will help him. I was thinking St. Faustina, so he can know the Jesus that I know.
Right. Yeah, this is a fascinating area. First of all, I want to applaud you, Karina, because you're evangelizing him and you're taking steps in the direction of sharing the truth with him. That's a good thing. I'm glad you're doing it.
Let me
tell you a quick story, and this will answer your question about what book, because I'm going to recommend to you a book by a gentleman whom I know personally. Well, let me take a step back. So back around somewhere right around like 1989 or 1990, I was invited to go speak at a parish in Brooklyn, New York. At the time, I was working at Catholic Answers and living in the San Diego area. So I hop on a big old jet airliner and I flew out there. There was another companion of mine from Catholic Answers, a colleague. He and I went there. And so we were there at the invitation of the parish priest at this parish in Brooklyn. And he said, the reason I'd like you to come out and give talks about Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses to help inoculate my Catholic flock, because the missionaries are very active in this area and some of my Catholic people are being siphoned off and they're leaving and becoming Mormon or becoming Jehovah's Witnesses. So we went there and we spent the weekend, Friday night, and then all day Saturday giving talks. We had a nice dinner with the priest. His name was Father Isaiah Bennett, and hit it off really well. And he had a real interest in Mormonism, a kind of a side hobby of his. He liked to study up on it. Long story short, I go back to California and several years go by, 3, 4, 5 years, something like that. And I had no more contact with him after that event, but I remembered it and I remembered him. Well, one day I get a phone call from a Mormon guy that I knew in Los Angeles who called and he said, you'll never guess who came and spoke at our Mormon church this past Sunday as a guest speaker. It's somebody that you know. And I said, really? He said, yeah. He came and talked about why he's a Mormon. And I said, well, who is it? He said, his name is Isaiah Bennett. And I said, no way. The only Isaiah Bennett I know is a Catholic priest on the other side of the country in Brooklyn. He said, that's him. He used to be a Catholic priest. He's now a Mormon. And he told me the story in about 2 minutes. He told me what happened. And I was really, really just beaten down with disappointment and sadness. You know, I even thought to myself, I went to his parish to help him keep his people Catholic, and he becomes a Mormon. What does that say about me? I mean, that's like not going to go on my resume, you know? So he said, here's his phone number. He would like you to call him. And I thought, oh, I don't want to call him. I don't want to get into an argument with him. And so I jotted down the number, and then I sort of slumped in my chair, and I was just really, really crestfallen. And as I was getting ready to depart for the day, somebody kept trying to call me and call me and call me, and it kept going to voicemail. And I didn't want to talk to anybody, so I just left the Catholic Answers office and I went home. Well, the following day, Karina, I thought I better get this over with. So I got the phone number out of my whatever pocket, whatever. And I dialed a number, and it was a number up in the, I think it was in the Provo area or Salt Lake, the greater Salt Lake City area. He picks up the phone. Hello. I said, hello, this is Patrick Madrid. Is this Isaiah? And there was this long silence. And he said, yeah, this is me, but you weren't supposed to call me. And I said, what? I said, so-and-so told me that you wanted me to call you. He gave me your number. And he said, yeah, but I thought about it afterward, and I decided I didn't want to get into an argument with you. And, you know, we had a nice time 3-4 years ago when you came out to the parish, and I didn't want to ruin that by having a confrontation with you. And I said, well, I didn't call to confront you. I just was asked to call you. And what happened was, Karina, when I got into the office on Monday, I discovered that it was that Mormon guy in Los Angeles who was frantically calling me, telling me, don't call Isaiah Bennett. Don't call him. Don't call him. He doesn't want you to call him. But I didn't. I think the Holy Spirit prevented me from picking up the phone, because if I had heard that from him, I would not have called. So here's what happened. I said, well, as long as we're on the phone together. I'll be happy to let you go if this is uncomfortable for you, no problem. He says, no, as long as we're on the phone, we might as well talk. So we did. We spoke for about an hour. And he was telling me all of his reasons why he left the Catholic Church, he left the priesthood, and he became a Mormon. And he was sort of on their lecture circuit giving his testimony about why he became Mormon. And nothing I said seemed to have any effect whatsoever. I asked him some questions. I pointed out a few things, and he was just like really confident that he had made the right decision. So when we finished talking after about an hour that Saturday, I felt even worse than I did before, because I thought, what a failure I am. And I, of anyone I knew more about Mormonism, and I should be in a position to help him, and I was a failure. And I just tried to put it out of my mind. You still with me, Karina?
Yes.
Okay. So I put it out of my mind, and I thought, well, that's that. What can I do? And maybe 6 months went by, and on a Saturday, Isaiah called me at home, and he said, I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes if you have time. I said, sure. And I'm thinking, well, he wants round two. He wants to go at it again. He wants to, you know, try to get me to become Catholic or to become Mormon. So he told me the most amazing thing. He said, do you remember in our conversation 6 months ago, the question that you asked me? And I said, no, I asked you 50 questions. I don't remember any particular one. He said, well, I do. You asked me at some point in the conversation, Isaiah, you are a Catholic priest. How could you turn your back on Jesus in the Eucharist? Now, I honestly, then as now, I don't remember asking him that question, but apparently I did. And it had such an impact on him, he said, that when our phone conversation was over the first time we talked, he said his hands were trembling. And he was very bothered by that comment. How could you turn your back on Christ in the Holy Eucharist? And he just couldn't let go of it. It made him angry. It made him kind of feel weird. And he couldn't stop thinking about it. And he told me later, he said that sometimes even out of a deep sleep, he would wake up and that question would be on his mind. How can you turn your back on Jesus in the Eucharist? So he said that was a big catalyst for him. And there were other issues too. For example, when he began to discover that the Mormon Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, isn't comprehensively, completely pro-life on the issue of abortion. I mean, they say it's wrong, but the Mormon Church allows for abortion in the case of quote-unquote, you know, incest in the health of the mother, rape and incest, that kind of thing. So he was crestfallen when he realized, well, they're not as pro-life as I thought they were. And so, long story short, he said it was that conversation that we weren't really supposed to have anyway, that I asked him a question that I didn't even remember asking him, that shook him so much that eventually, he said, in that ensuing 6 months, he wound up leaving the Mormon Church and he came home to the Catholic Church. And he began to live a life of obscurity, you know, doing simple, quiet, hidden jobs because he could no longer come back to the priesthood because of the public scandal of the apostasy and so forth. Well, long story short, now that you know the background, he wrote a book. He actually wrote two books. One is called Inside Mormonism, and it's the longer of the two. The second book is called When Mormons Call. Now, the reason I went to all the trouble to tell you the background is that you can understand. So he was a Catholic priest. He left. He became Mormon. He received his temple recommend. He did proxy work for the dead in the temple. He was for real. He was a, you know, he was in there at that level. Well, when he left, he wanted to do some reparation for what had happened. So he wrote this book, published by Catholic Answers, as a way to help other Catholics not make the same mistake. So I would recommend get that book. It's called Inside Mormonism by Isaiah Bennett. Okay. That was a long answer to a short question, but when you read it, you'll understand why. I hope that's helpful, Karina. I've got to go. Also, check out CatholicUtah.org. There are a bunch of Catholic folk in the great state of Utah that would love to talk to you if you're Catholic. CatholicUtah.org. Till tomorrow or Monday, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me.